The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Stevie Nicol here in the studio. And probably no surprise to you that Erling Haaland has been all over the back pages after that game against Borussia Dortmund, scoring that magnificent goal to get the comeback win for his Man City side. It was his 13th goal in just 8 games since he arrived with the Citizens. Afterwards, his coach Pep Guardiola had some high praise for him.
Maybe the people who knows me, you can, maybe you know the influence Johan Cruyff had in my life as a person, education, and a manager and mentor and everything. And Johan Cruyff, years ago, scored in the Camp Nou an incredible goal against Atletico Madrid. It was quite similar to the Erling Haaland score. And the moment he scored a goal, I thought, oh, Johan Cruyff.
Incredible, hey, getting him in the same word as Johan Cruyff there. We've got Pablo Zabaleta and Ian Dark joining us too. Pablo, I'd like to start with you, actually. Is he the player that it's going to be the hardest to defend against right now as a defender?
Yes, absolutely. I think so. He's a really big man. When I was in the preseason with a team in America, I saw him coming on the plane and I was, you know, wow, he's big. But it's incredible. He's everything that you want from a number nine. He's fast, strong, clinical. He has that physical presence inside the box that, of course, makes him very special and very difficult to defend against.
What do you reckon, Stevie? Most undefendable player in the world right now?
Absolutely. I mean, everybody asks you the same question. How do you defend against this guy? Well, I'm sorry, but nobody's come up with the answer yet, and I certainly don't know it.
What is it that you just look at him and think, wow?
Well, generally when you're defending against a striker, most players have a certain strength, and so if you can, you try and push them away from that strength. The problem you've got when you play against this guy is that he doesn't have a weakness. Everything he has is a strength, basically. There's not a weakness there. You know, if you try and outrun him, then good luck with that. If you try and outmuscle him, good luck with that. He's so physically strong. If you try and outjump him, good luck with that. He's 6'5". Try and put him on his right foot, good luck with that, because he can calmly roll the ball in the corner. And put him on his left foot, good luck with that, because whether he's 30 yards away or 3 yards away, he'll blast it in the back of the net. So basically, good luck, defenders, with him.
Pablo, do you just let the other centre-back deal with him?
No, very difficult. As Steve said, as a centre-back, if you want to defend him inside the box, he's really strong in the air. I mean, when you see Cancelo work, some of those players, you know, get into the final third and put some crossing into the box, he's always there. He jumps really high, uses his arms really well. Good with the ball on his feet. So he's really good. I mean, he's really, it must be very, very difficult as a defender to play against him.
Ian, you've commentated on a lot of players in your career. How often have you seen someone this gifted, this young?
Not very often is the truth. I mean, I think he's going to rip up the record books. And Stevie and Pablo are right, because both of them top-class defenders. There isn't really any way to counteract him. I've heard people say, well, you can't play too high against Manchester City because he's got the speed to get in behind. But look at his statistics. I think the majority of those goals he's scored already are from inside the 6-yard box. So it's the devil and the deep blue sea, really. And he's got this power, he's got this speed. And I think he just knows where the chances are going to arise in the penalty area, like the great goal scorers do. I just think he is thinking 2 steps ahead of the defenders all the time.
Do you have any comparisons?
No.
No?
Never seen anybody like him.
Is there anyone you can think of, Ian, when you actually see him play that you do think he's like?
No, not really. I mean, and you look at his stats and it's coming out that, you know, he's playing in Europe's top five leagues all the time and he's averaging a goal a game, just about. So people have devised plans to stop him. They've kept him quiet for periods in games and then you look at it at the end of the game and he scored two or he's got a hat trick again. He's popped up last night with that winner. You know, how many people would have scored a goal like that? Okay, we heard Pep say he thought Johan Cruyff did, but you're going back quite a way there, aren't you? So, no, I think he is a phenomenon and, yeah, probably unique.
Yeah, you're going back to the 70s for that Cruyff goal against Atletico.
Do you know, I think it's one thing to... I mean, that's just incredible. The one thing that the two of them have in common, him and Cruyff, and probably the one thing that all the greatest of the great players that I'm talking about now, they have an understanding of the game so young. You know, most players get to 25, 26, 27 when they start, things become easy or easier because you've now got experience, you've now played a ton of games, you start reading the game better, you start understanding the game better. But the greats, they understand it from such an early age. And like Cruyff, with his goal, because he understands the ball that's coming across, so he understands where he's got to be, he understands when he's got to get there, and he's got the physical capability of getting his body in a position to finish it. That's exactly what Haaland does. You know, depending on who's got the ball at their feet, he reads and understands what they're looking for, where they're going to try and play it. And this is while the game's going on at 100 miles an hour. So, listen, for somebody so young, yes, he's fast and strong and all that, but there's been loads of people who have been fast and strong and quick and la, la, la. But I'll tell you what, the understanding of what goes on in the penalty box in particular, this guy's miles ahead of everybody.
Which goal was better, Pablo, Cruyff's or Haaland's?
Listen, Kay, even yesterday after the game when I watched Pep Guardiola press conference, I actually forgot about Cruyff's goal. I was born in 85. So it looks like 50, but I went to internet just to. I have seen this goal when I watch it. I remember I've seen this goal before, but I have to say that for me, Haaland goal was even better than the Johan Cruyff goal. I think because, I don't know, he's in between two defenders from Borussia Dortmund. The ball was really high. I don't know. I think Haaland, in my opinion, was slightly better. Both goals were great, very similar. Great goal from Pep. But for me, Haaland's goal was best.
Well, it's interesting, Pablo, because even after the game, Pep Guardiola did admit that Haaland's goal glossed over what wasn't the best performance from Manchester City against Borussia Dortmund. Oh. Would you have any worries for them at all, Pablo, City?
No, it's just one of those games that you cannot expect Man City to play every single game at their best. Sometimes that happened, but you can see the squad depth, when Foden came on the second half with Julian Alvarez, they brought some energy into the game and determination, some pace from the wide area. So it shows that, you know, with this squad, you have many options, and yeah, it was probably not the best performance for Manchester City last night, but they still have quality enough to create moments of magic and to score goals like they did last night, and so that's why, you know, I'm not too much worried about that.
Yeah, well, let's move on to talk about Graham Potter's first game as Chelsea coach. It came in the Champions League against Salzburg. It finished 1-1. But all the talk with Chelsea right now has been about their owner, Todd Boehly. Biggest story in the headlines right now, with his proposals to mix things up a little bit in English football to make some more money. Here's what he's had to say about it.
Those relegation games are some of the highest broadcast games. I mean, ultimately, I hope that the Premier League takes a little bit of a lesson from American sports and really starts to figure out, you know, why wouldn't we do a tournament? You know, with the bottom four teams? Why isn't there an All-Star game? I mean, people are talking about more money for the pyramid. You know, MLB did their All-Star game in LA this year. We made $200 million from, you know, a Monday and a Tuesday. You know, so, you know, I think you could do a North versus South, you know, All-Star game for Premier League and fund whatever the pyramid needed very easily.
I have to imagine you've had conversations along those lines with some of your fellow owners. Are they supportive?
Yeah, listen, I think that everyone likes the idea of, you know, more revenue for the league. I think that, you know, there's a cultural aspect that, you know, is just, you know, is real. And I think, you know, I think evolution will come.
Ian, you are one of U.S. soccer's most recognizable voices. What are your thoughts on what Todd Boehly had to say about bringing an All-Star game with North versus South in the Premier League?
Well, it'll be interesting to the fans of Aston Villa and Nottingham Forest, who are in the Midlands, so I don't know where any of their players fit into it. North against South. Here's something. I mean, I think it shows. I'm not going to criticize because it's great to have new ideas and new debates. So I don't agree with people being very critical about Todd Boehly and firing arrows at him about it. Okay, he's put up an idea, but I'll tell you this: it's not going to happen. There's no demand All-Star game. It's just not part of the culture of the game in this country. In the same way that in the United States and in MLS. They're not thinking about having relegation either, although it's a key part of the narrative on this side of the Atlantic. So I think that's where I'm coming from with it. He can float the idea, but I can't see it happening in a month of Sundays.
Pablo, do you like the idea of an All-Star game in the top flight of English football?
Not sure about it. I mean, I've been in England for so many years, or playing football in Spain, and to be honest, I've been with Man City challenging, you know, for the Premier League, and I've been many times when I was at Espanyol or even when I was at West Ham fighting for the relegation. So I've been involved in both part of, you know, table. And for me, always been in a situation where you have to prepare a game where you are in training and you are at the bottom three. You, in the way you approach the game and the mentality that you create with your teammates, with the manager and everyone, is something that for me was very special. So I respect every country, every league is different. That's cultural. I think it will never happen in Europe, in my opinion. I don't know.
Let's get to the game and to what we saw from Chelsea. Obviously, they're not going to be in action this weekend. It's postponed that game against Liverpool. 1-1 this game finished. It was Potter's first game. But what can he do in that time, Stevie, to fix a few things?
Well, I think the biggest thing he has to fix is what happens from the middle of the park to the front three. Because, you know, as up and down as Chelsea have played this season, they've had plenty of the ball. They just haven't created enough real opportunities where you're saying you should have scored. You know, and the one thing that Brighton did under Potter was they created lots of chances. How many times have we sat here on a Sunday talking about how did Brighton not win that game? The amount of possession they had, the amount of ball they had, the amount of chances in particular, and they didn't win games. And that was because they had Danny Welbeck up front, or Mope, or Alzate, or, you know, players who are good players, but they're certainly not as good or have the experience of an Aubameyang or a Sterling or a Havertz or a Mount. So if he can get his Chelsea midfield and his front players, whichever it may be, to produce the type of opportunities that the Brighton team did, then they'll be fine, because that means they'll score goals. And when you score goals, the first thing it does, it takes the pressure off your defence. You know, when you're not putting the ball in the net, it just takes one mistake or one good bit of play from your opposition and all of a sudden you're behind. And so it affects everything you do. So for me, if he can start getting the front players and the front players and the players into some sort of rhythm, some sort of good understanding, and start creating better chances and scoring goals, that is going to sweep through the team like no tomorrow. And they'll just be so much stronger and better.
And how long does that take then, Pablo? How long does that take for a manager to get his ideas across, to put his stamp on this new team?
Well, it's not that easy, especially that early in the season where some of the new signing, of course, went to Chelsea because probably they trusted the manager in the way they saw Chelsea playing in the last few years. And now, obviously, a new manager with a new style, new ideas. And it takes a few weeks, a month at least, to think, you know, a new style of football and to find the right players for each position. And it's not going to be that easy for Chelsea. But, okay, that was the decision of the owners to sack Tuchel, to bring Potter in, and I wish him all the best, because to be honest, what he's done at Brighton, it's been incredible. He's a young manager that we have seen Brighton playing some great football. Obviously, the expectation at Chelsea is completely different where he come from. But of course, you know, he will try his best, but at least a month, I would say, is what it normally takes for the managers to put the players right and bring their new ideas into
a
new club.
So the fact that the game has been postponed, then you've got the international break. Is this a best-case scenario for Potter right now with Chelsea? They're not going to play the first game until the first of the next month.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's definitely working in favour, the fact that he will have been able to be on the training field and walk through things and give his ideas and vice versa. And as Pablo said, it's about finding out the connections. You know, which players are better on the field with each other, you know. But he doesn't have a lot of time. He's lucky he does have time because of the postponements, but it's probably not enough. But some's better than none.
There's a lot of talk about this very subject on the latest Gab and Jules podcast. They also give their thoughts on Todd Bowley's ideas about the All-Star game. Make sure to download the latest edition wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Here's a look at the Spanish press the day after Barcelona lost to Bayern 2-0. Not too unhappy are the media with their side's performance. There were a lot of positives to be taken from it. Heads held high, you see here in Mundo Deportivo, the Catalan press here. Pablo, do you think this was actually a missed opportunity for Barca to make a statement here? Many people were saying that this would be an acid test for them. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was a great scenario for Barcelona to go to Munich and win the game. And you know, after that really heavy defeat back in the days where it kept people talking. And especially for the new team that brought a lot of players in the summer. And they've been playing a great football, I have to say. I think Xavi is doing a great job. The Lewandowski was a great signing. Dembele has been absolutely fantastic since the start of the season. Rafinha, I mean, Gavi signing a new contract. They have a great team. I think, you know, every time you go to Munich away from home, it's a tough game to play against. But I think, I thought in the first 5 minutes, they've been really good. They just made a few chances. They could have been a different story if they took probably 2-3 goals in the first half. And then, of course, Bayern Munich, they have quality enough to create chances to score goals, and that happened in the second half. But overall, I think Xavi has to be very pleased with the performance of the team.
Ian, are you surprised at how quickly this side have gelled and how it just seems to have gone so seamlessly for these new players fitting into it?
Yeah, I mean, they're an attractive team to watch, and a lot of the football, you could describe it almost as snazzy, but, you know, the other night in Munich, really, it was almost a collector's item, a football match when, for once, Robert Lewandowski, playing against his old teammates, didn't have his shooting boots on. There were a few chances there he would normally tuck away, so in that regard, Barcelona were a little bit unlucky. Where I have a little bit of a problem with them, and I think you saw it in that game they had recently against Sevilla, where they won handsomely in the end, but they gave up quite a few chances in the game. Not so sure, frankly, about the defence when they're playing top teams. And sure enough, they managed to concede a couple of games in a game they probably should have won against Bayern Munich.
So could that be a worry then, Pablo? Games that they should be winning?
Well, Xavi, I mean, he mentioned that in the press conference, that that's the Champions League. It's not enough only playing good. You have to take your chances because in the Champions League, you're playing against the best teams in Europe. And they, if you're not, clinical enough to take those chances, then the other team can punish. And that what happened in the second half, only 10 good minutes of Bayern Munich was enough to score two goals. And mentally, I think they failed in the second half those moments. So if they really want to challenge at the top with the top clubs in Europe, I think they, of course, they have to play at their best. I have to say that I've been watching Barcelona a lot this season, and they've been playing really good football. And I think, as I said before, Xavi has to be pleased for what he has seen so far this season. But obviously sometimes small details can make the difference in a top competition like the Champions League.
That's coming from an Espanol man. Snazzy, the word snazzy. How would we describe that for those who don't know? Cool?
Exciting.
Exciting. There you go. My producer was like, snazzy? Anyway, you know what is snazzy? The Madrid derby. It's coming up this weekend. It is Atleti against Real Madrid at the Metropolitano.
I think that'll be snazzy.
Will it be snazzy?
With Atletico Madrid involved?
How do we know? So far it has been, though, Pablo. No Benzema, no problem. In fact, Madrid's man of the moment is Fede Valverde. Just how important has he been lately?
Pablo. Sorry, say again, okay.
And just talking about Fede Valverde being Madrid's man of the moment, just been brilliant lately.
Yes, he's been brilliant. I mean, the last two goals, he scored in the last few games, been incredible. I love this player. He's so passionate about football, you know, in the way he plays, and very physical, but he can score with the right, with the left. He has so much confidence at the moment. I'm saying something that he has to score more than 10 goals this season. And continue like that, of course he will, because he's in a great form. He can play, you know, in midfield as a number 8, but also he can do the job for Real Madrid. Madrid playing wide on the right. It's been a great news for Real Madrid. They're missing Benzema at the moment, but Rodrigo, Vinicius has to lift a little bit his performance. But Fede the main man for Real Madrid at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny what Ancelotti actually said. He said if he can't score 10 goals a season, then he's got to question himself as a coach. But he said it in a much more Spanish tone. Let's talk then about this game. What are you most looking forward to, Ian? You're going to be on the call.
Yeah, well, I think, again, Diego Simeone have a plan, isn't he? I mean, Atletico Madrid can be very, 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 very gritty in these fixtures. But I think you've seen something from Real Madrid a year or so, where they not only have the talent, but they have a very, very, very good mentality, a winning mentality. I mean, Jurgen Klopp used to call Liverpool the mentality monster. Real Madrid have got a bit about them. It wasn't just a freak and a fluke that they're getting out of corners in the Champions League against very good teams last year. That winning the thing. Nobody was tipping that at the start of the season. And, you know, you may like Valverde, you're starting to see the evolvement of this team, that three-man field, Kroos, Casemiro, Modric. Well, Casemiro's gone now to Manchester United. They realised, I think, towards the back end of last season in the big games, that Valverde's and energy and legs were needed in that slightly aging midfield. And it's changing. Tchouameni's arrived. You've got Camavinga as well. So that's a good Real Madrid team who just keep finding ways to win. And I think they're probably going to do that at the weekend.
Yeah, finding ways to win as well, Stevie, without Benzema. Ancelotti was asked if he'd be available. He said, if he trains, yes. If he doesn't train, no. Mm. Saying that he's not going to take any risks with this player. Right. That's the right decision, isn't it?
100%. Yeah, I mean, it's not about one game, it's about the season. And particularly at Benzema's age, then definitely you can't take a chance. You know, you bring him back early with any sort of injury and you can just make it worse so easily. And quite frankly, I think they can win this game without Benzema. The truth is, they've got enough going forward. Probably Rodrigo will start through the middle. Ancelotti's pretty much told us that last weekend. So you'll have Valverde, Rodrigo and Vinny Jr. I mean, that's an exceptional front three.
Is it
so
snazzy?
Not as snazzy as Benzema's playing, but I think it will be enough against a team that you know will still sit back and try and just counter-attack.
The result then, Pablo? A prediction, a result?
I think Real Madrid 2-1 the weekend. They've been in a great form. I have to go with Real Madrid.
A whole sling off in La Liga this weekend on ESPN Plus, ESPN Plus to catch every single game. And that is the big one on Sunday. It's Atleti taking on Real Madrid. Coverage begins at 2 p.m. Eastern. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Neymar has taken to Twitter after he was yellow carded for his goal in the game against Maccabi Haifa. He said, there it is, a celebration card. Another one for the list for Neymar. It's Neymar. See that these things happen. Next time I will warn the referees that I'm a referee. Do it. Football keeps getting more annoying. Total lack of respect for the athlete. This kind of thing can't happen. I take the yellow for simply not having done anything and I continue to be harmed. And the referee? Not even to say he was wrong, it's a lot of lack of respect. This is a mixture of what he said on Twitter and on Instagram. It is a celebration we've seen before. Is it an overreaction? Galtier thought it was too, Stevie.
Yeah.
A yellow card's too much?
Oh, yes. I mean, what do you want? You want guys to celebrate. And you try to tell me that the Maccabi fans hadn't been giving him an earful as well? I mean, seriously. Yeah, I don't understand the yellow card at all. There's obviously going to be some people who will say, oh, he's the one that's disrespecting them by sticking his tongue out. And I mean, come on, grow up. You know, if you want an atmosphere and you want the big stars to perform, then you have to take certain things along with it. And somebody's celebrating, you've got to take it. But no, Referee's completely out of order, if you ask me.
And it is a celebration that he uses to respond to those critics of his.
Yes.
Do you agree with Stevie, Pablo?
Yeah, I agree with Stevie, 100%. I think Neymar did nothing, you know. It was something similar a few weeks ago with Gerard Moreno when he was playing for Atletico Madrid. He did some celebration, very similar to Neymar, to the camera. And some of the Atletico Madrid fans and some of the players were really upset about it. And it was just a celebration for his song, I think. And then Gerard Moreno is probably the nicest man in the league. So, so Stevie said, just grow up. Like when Vinicius scores, he goes and do the dance and all that. That's the way that those guys enjoy football and, you know, just, you know, play on. Come on, you know, don't be really upset because of that.
Ian, do you agree with these two?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we don't want fun police ruining the spectacle of the game. So, look, if that's how Neymar wants to celebrate the goal, I don't find it particularly entertaining myself. But, you know, hey, look, there are far worse things going on in the game. So the referee should have just kept the cards in his pocket. It was pretty daft. He's right, yeah, Neymar, about this one.
And we're getting high praise from an Argentine on a Brazilian player as well here, just ahead of a World Cup too. Well done, Pablo. What have you thought of Neymar's performances lately? Are you a bit worried with what you've been seeing?
I mean, I respect Brazil. They had a great team. They have great players. Neymar been in a great form recently. It seems like that front three with Mbappe, Messi, Neymar, they all having fun at the moment. But yeah, same with Messi. They both been in a great form. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting in the World Cup. I think Brazil and Argentina are two of those teams that are candidate to go far. Hopefully, I don't know. I don't want Brazil to win it, but I have to accept that Neymar at the moment is playing really well.
It's all right. We saw you sneak a little Lionel Messi reference in there, but that's fair enough. We understand that. Let's continue to talk about Argentines then, shall we? Because Mauro Icardi's career has taken a bit of a turn, we shall say. He's gone to Galatasaray now on loan from PSG. Did you ever expect things to turn out this way for him, Pablo?
Well, I hope he can do well at Galatasaray. He's a good player. You know, it's been difficult when he was at PSG, lack of playing time. Because sometimes, when you have competition in some team, you have to show something else. You have to have the right mentality to play week in, week out. And I think that move for Mauro is going to be good. The World Cup is coming. I don't know if we'll make the squad list for the World Cup. I'm not sure about it. But he's a great player. He's only 29. He's done a great job at Inter before PSG. But I think, Galatasaray is a great club. For me, it's not the strongest league. He's still good enough to probably have gone somewhere else in Europe, back to Italy. I don't know, but... Okay, I wish Mauro all the best. Still a great player, so hopefully he can do well and enjoy football again.
So Mauro Icardi going to the Turkish league. Going to the Greek league has been James Rodriguez. He's joining Marcelo at Olympiacos. And this is an interesting one as well. When you think about how his career has turned out too, Ian, that 2014 World Cup, he was the poster boy for Colombia, and you could say for South American football too at the time. There is a real feeling of what could have been with this player.
Yeah, it's funny, really, the way it's happened, and you don't like to see it. I mean, you can think of Dele Alli as well in England. It was a star at the 2018 World Cup, and his career as well, frankly, gone down the drain. And I mean, he's such a gifted player, James Rodriguez, such a delight to watch when he's playing well. But yeah, like Icardi, you know, you're not at the top forever, and you don't know what things are going on in people's lives, why the talent doesn't leave them, but somewhere along the line, maybe the mentality, the approach does. It didn't work out for James Rodriguez at Everton, even though everybody was extremely excited when he signed. So a little bit sad to see.
What do you think of it, Pablo, when you think of what we saw from James Rodriguez in 2014?
Yeah, same. I played many times against him, and he was a joy to watch. And play really with a huge technique, that left foot, But sometimes it's not just about talent. It's just about having the right mentality. Consistent, something in football, very, very important, very important. Being a good professional. I don't know him. But all I can say, I think for him to go to Qatar, it didn't work. Work out. And as Ian said before, and another chance at Olympiacos. Okay, same as Mau. Probably not the strongest. At least he will have a chance to enjoy his football, and see if that can. He was such a great player back in the days.
How tough is it, Stevie, for the average football stand, the pressure that comes with a professional footballer, and the fact that they won't going on behind the scenes in their life as well?
Well, they won't. Well, they'll listen to players talk. The sacrifices, oh, woe is me, getting paid all this. But the truth is, half of being a professional at any is about your home life, about the week, whether you get enough sleep, eating the right things, eating, all of these things are important. Time. It's not a case of couple of then you just look after yourself. It'll be an ongoing thing, particularly today. And so. I just don't think that your normal football support has any sort of understanding of what, and never will be today. How are they supposed to, when they've never been involved in it, in the middle of it? But for anybody who, the truth is, half of the game is between your ears, and it's the mentality. And unfortunately, somebody like James Rodriguez, who's shown us some fleeting moments of absolute brilliance, for a whole host of reasons, and a lot of them what's going on in his head, hasn't been able to produce it consistently. So, yeah, we don't know what goes on at home, but I'll tell you, what does go on at home is a huge part of any sportsman's life that helps him succeed.
There's a lot more talk about topics like this on our YouTube page. Make sure to stay up to date with all the latest from the world of football by going on over there. And while you're there, why don't you click subscribe?
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's turn our attentions to the Europa League, and after that opening defeat to Real Sociedad, Manchester United got things back on track when they won 2-0 against Sheriff. Goals from Jadon Sancho and a penalty from Cristiano Ronaldo. Professional display from United, would you say, Ian?
Yeah, professional display. They got the job done. Very good goal from Jadon Sancho. Maybe he was just trying to make a point to Gareth Southgate, who's left him out of the England squad, being named today. And we are very close to the World Cup, so his chances of making that World Cup don't look good. But going back to United, yeah, they needed that, because the way that group is now set up, and the whole Europa League set up, is you've got to top the group to go into the round of 16. Otherwise, if you're second, and they are second, and Real Sociedad have the advantage, they've got to play a playoff with a third place team from the Champions League. So that's two extra games. Manchester United don't need that. I mean, it fell their way tonight. Their game at the weekend against Leeds United is off, so they could put out their full team. And professional job.
How did that full team look, Stevie, with Ronaldo up top?
Nothing to get excited about. Professional is absolutely the word. Ronaldo got his goal with a penalty kick and get the victory. And they get a chance, and Ten Hag gets a chance to put the base of his team pretty much back on the field. And I think that's what he's trying to do. He's going to play the majority of this team as much as he can and as often as he can to build something. And regardless of whether you're sparkling or snazzy, if you want, it's about winning games and building up confidence, building the team up, so that, okay, maybe you're not Brazil in disguise, But you're winning games. And that's what Ten Hag, other than the Sociedad result, has done since the Liverpool game.
So are you saying you've seen improvement here under Ten Hag?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is this team doesn't look like if something goes wrong, they're going to fall apart, which is huge considering we really well.
Let me just go back to that chat about England, Ian, because you brought it up. Obviously, Jadon Sancho, there's been quite a lot of talk about the fact that he hasn't been included there. Do you think that's the wrong decision from Gareth Southgate? Because he's called a few names up that have been questionable as well. He's defended why he's done that, but there are a few people, let's say, letting off some steam about that England call-up.
Yeah, maybe they can, but Jadon Sancho, frankly, hasn't really done enough since he went to Manchester United to force his way into the England team. They've got quite a few players contesting those wide positions. So Sancho has to do more in the next few weeks before the squad is announced. He's got, I think, about 8 weeks. So, you know, more of what he did tonight. You know, he looked a bit more. That goal was, you know, almost like an excerpt from his career at Dortmund. But, you know, Marcus Rashford is another case in point. He's injured at the moment. He hasn't played for England since the European Championship final. And it's the wrong time for him to get injured just when he was beginning to start to make a little bit of a case and look a little bit more like his old self. But, you know, they've picked Brentford's Ivan Toney. And frankly, if you ask me, he deserves it. He's in pole position almost now to be the backup to Harry Kane.
And obviously that's fair enough and that's great to see for Ivan Toney. But then we're seeing the likes of Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw. Gareth Southgate was asked about some of these names. He said they have and can still continue to produce for England. Has he been right to call them up? He has also admitted that he knows they haven't been doing as well for their sides. And some of these names, if they've even been playing that much for their sides.
That is a problem for England for sure. Harry Maguire, how many minutes is he going to play for Manchester United in the next few weeks? He's got the Manchester Derby coming up pretty soon. I doubt if he's going to be selected for that. It'll be Martinez and Varane in the centre of defence. So it is a problem. Luke Shaw as well, hardly kicked a ball this season. Calvin Phillips hardly kicked a ball for Manchester City. He's there as well. So these are problems, and there may be reasons why you wouldn't fancy England that much at the World Cup.
How hard is that, Stevie, if you're the player that hasn't been playing that many minutes with your club and then you get called up to play international games? Granted, this is two friendlies coming up, but still.
I can only imagine how difficult physically it'll be. Listen, you can go running and do all kinds of things to keep yourself somewhat fit, but the difference between being fit and healthy and being match fit are two completely different things. And for Harry Maguire or anybody else not to be playing, not just regularly, but at all, to then be asked to go and to play in a World Cup finals, I don't think any manager, could put their self or the rest of their team on the shoulders of somebody who hasn't kicked a ball. That's unfair to everybody involved, particularly the player. So if Harry Maguire doesn't kick a ball between now and the World Cup, I don't see any way that he can be picked to play for England.
Well, Stevie, Ian and Pablo Zabaleta will be answering your questions on the latest edition of Extra Time. Make sure to go and check out our YouTube page where you can always keep up to date with the Extra Time playlist. And that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC, but we are coming right back with you because we'll be bringing you Extra Time answering your tweets. Pablo Zabaleta and Ian Dark will join us too, so stick around for that. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We've got Stevie Nicol, Pablo Zabaleta and Ian Dark, who brought the word snazzy to tonight's show, and we are here for it. Looking very snazzy in your... in your nice shirt
top.
There as well today. It's pajama top.
It's
not as bad as Rob was pajama top last week.
That was a classy, silky pajama top.
That was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It really was. First question is for you, Stevie. Do you think the calming presence of Matip will help Van Dijk get back to his best?
Well, I think as a centre-back, when you have a guy beside you who who you've played with, who you trust, who you know's got your back, who, as you say, is calm, then you will choose that over anything else. Because at the end of the day, it's really about that. Playing centre-back is about being cool and being calm. It's not about charging into centre-forwards and kicking people and heading balls away. It's about playing the game with your brain. And so to have somebody beside you who plays the game with his brain is good brain, never mind Van Dijk.
How important Dijk. Is it to have that partnership with somebody that do have that calming presence alongside you, Pavel?
Well, that's always really important. Especially, I would not forget Wilson and Company. He was one of those players that always made me feel really secure at the back, a real leader.
I mean, we're bringing the names up here, aren't we? I think you're gonna feel. I think you're going to feel pretty safe with Vincent Kompany next to you. I can definitely say that. Pablo, who was the most intimidating player you played with?
When you say intimidating, what do you mean? Someone who is scary to play with, or what do you mean with that?
I think probably someone who's maybe a little bit scary and you don't want to get on the wrong side
scary,
of.
Scary, right. Probably Nigel de Jong. he was a tough player. I was even a tough player as well. I have to admit that. But I always wanted to play with Nigel de Jong next to me because he was a monster. He was those sliced tackles and always screaming, shouting. That was probably, the most intimidating player, I think, to say.
Do you have any funny stories about him, Pablo, that you share?
About Nigel? No, he was funny because always in training, he was very... he always wanted to win. He was a winner, you know, and I remember everyone, having a laugh at Nigel when he was losing in small Sinai games because he just wanted to kick everyone, you know. He didn't really want to play football. He wanted to football all the players, you know, and he was always really funny to watch. Funny.
Where's Stevie? How intimidating were you as a player?
Me? I've no idea. I'll tell you who it was, though. Graeme Souness.
I knew you were going to say Graeme Souness.
Well, I mean, it would be intimidating to play against, no question. Against, no, because, you know, no nonsense. If you wanted a game football, he would have football. If you wanted to fight, then that was a bad idea. He would outfight you. But he intimidated you. You played with him because you wanted to make sure you did everything right. Did everything. You know? I mean, when you look up to a player as much as I looked up to him, Dalglish and Hansen, you know, you want to make sure you give them a good, ball. You want to make sure you're, because you knew, because they were there for you. And that's what Souness was there for everybody on his team. No matter what it was, if you look at any games where there's any scraps or any fouls or anyone, there's one guy who's fighting for everybody, and that's him.
Know what? With him years later.
Yep.
Oh no, yeah. And my coach and I were absolutely terrified of him. No reason. There was nothing. We were so intimidated by him. Joe wasn't the same on the day we were on. Spoke to each other that night. My co-host and I. And we said tomorrow we've just be more loose. And let's make him a little bit.
Well, an aura about.
And then he had a really good with us. And he ended up being a great show with him. But we were terrified of him. So I can only imagine what it was like when he was a player. Did you ever have any moments like that, Ian? Where there's that you've met or had to that you're intimidated by?
Well, quite a few. You think back, really. I mean, Stevie will understand. I think, you know, Now, you talk to intimidating player. I think the game was probably a lot more frightening. You know, before there were so many yellow and red cards, you could get away with a lot more. I think every team had a hatchet man. If you go back, if you get a chance, you know, you can go through social media or YouTube or whatever. Go and watch the 1988 Cup final in the opening seconds when Vinnie Jones wipes out Steve McMahon. I mean, it was three red cards in one in the first 10 seconds of the game. Yeah, the game just carried on. And it was often like that. The Leeds team had some nasty people. Every team had somebody who could be pretty brutal. I mean, Graham Souness, yeah, you mentioned him. He was frightening as well. I mean, you wouldn't argue with him on the phone. And there are, I think, a lot of people like that in the game. It's a hard and ruthless game, and people are trying to win. But I think, you get away with a whole lot less now because of the cameras and, yellow and red cards are handed out like confetti.
Players today have no idea what a physical battle is. You can understand them. Actually, was a time when, if you go, we would call it in football getting done. And basically, what happens is there's a hold between two players, and nobody's giving up, right? And there are certain things you do to make sure you can get hurt and the other guy gets it. And if you ended up, because we've all ended up on the wrong side of the challenges, everybody, regardless of how good or bad you are at doing it, you learn because you get caught yourself. And when you get caught, and you're the one hobbling away, it's not crying to the referee or complaining about the guy that did it. You're annoyed at yourself because you put yourself in that position that you got done. That's how it was. That's what we call a physical game. When somebody does you and you blame yourself because you didn't do them and you put yourself in a position where you were going to get hurt. That was the mentality. These players today have no idea what a physical challenge is.
Although Pablo is obviously a different generation of players, but Pablo, as an Argentine footballer, you've got to be tough, haven't you?
Hey, I like physical football. I was a tough player as well. I used to like into strong tackles and all that, but I have to say, if you look back, in the 80s, and especially in English football, I still say, so many times when I was in England, game from that time, and everyone was just kicking everybody, not playing football. And you can really go away with no yellows or red card. But these days, it's of course with the VR technology and a referee, it's different. Football becomes very soft these days. But at the end of the day, I think. That's good. I don't want to see football from 20, 25 years ago.
Actually, it leads us perfectly to the next question, Pablo. What were the major culture shocks you faced as an Argentine, both in Spain and in England? Did Espanyol or Manchester City make special efforts to settle international players and their families into the areas?
Well, a big difference, yes. Spain is quite similar to Argentina, same language, food, very similar. I mean, for our South American players, especially from Argentina, to come to Spain is easy to settle. But it was more difficult for me when I went to England, of course. I couldn't speak a word in English. It was dark in the winter or the weather. Of course, for the family was different. I couldn't communicate with the manager. I couldn't talk to my teammates. The first few games, I felt like very difficult. But probably I put a lot more effort when I was in England because I wanted to speak in English. I wanted to have a good communication with everybody at the club. So it was. Very difficult from England to Spain. But at the end of the day, I think football was the main thing. And off the field also, I wanted to have a social life with everybody. So yeah, that's all I can say.
And now we get to have him on ESPN FC.
There you go.
We benefited too. Ian, do you have any specific memories of calling games for anyone on the ESPN FC panel? And it doesn't just have to be tonight's panel, but if you do, that would be great.
Well, I commentated on, well, Pablo. Of course, you know, that game that the famous Aguero goal won the title for Manchester City in 2012, and everybody talks about that. But who scored the first goal for Manchester City that day? It was Pablo Zabaleta from
right there.
I was commentating on that.
Thank you for reminding that. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a good goal. Good goal, Pablo. I can't believe, you know, I mean, we're doing our long special on it, I think. So yeah, Stevie, I commented on lots and lots of times, because he was, as we never tire of reminding you on this show, he was the footballer of the year in 1989. So he could play midfield too. So
Darky actually commentated the Man testimonial.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. Yeah. You rang me up. Do you remember? You rang me up and we had a good chat about all the players that were going to be playing in it. Yeah. I did.
Did you handpick him yourself?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Only the best.
Only the best. I like it. No, I agree. All right, Ian. A nice question for you. What do you make of Pompey's great start to the season, tied first in League One? Do you think they have a realistic shot at getting back up to the Championship this year?
Somebody's going to fart.
Yeah, they do have a realistic shot. Yeah, they do have a realistic shot. And Stevie or another Pompey as well, because he played them in that FA Cup semi-final in 1992, where Liverpool nine their own penalties. And they always got a terrible shot from Pompey. But to ask the question, look, they made a great start. And they'll definitely be up there, I think, at the end. I put it much stronger than that. But it is really good to see that at least they're making a serious effort to get up in the Championship, which is where they belong.
My side can stay in the Championship, Ian. We might be going the other way and passing you on the way down, the way things are going.
Ian, can you remember who missed the chance in the game? The second game at Villa Park.
Alan McLaughlin hit the underside of the bar with the bounce down on the wrong side of the line. Remember that?
I do. I just couldn't remember. I do.
No longer with us, sadly.
Aye. 2 minutes to go, and then what? 2 minutes. We should have got beaten the first. We should have Highbury. And we should have got beaten the second. And we should have put a Villa. Again, they're not winning on penalties. They're not winning a cup.
Wow.
Winning a cup. And bit of luck.
But amazing is Ian's memory as well. That's incredible as well.
That was first night of my life. First night penalty shootout. Penalty shot. I was in a bad mood. I was 2 weeks after. 2 weeks.
I always remember Dean Saunders' penalty kick.
Dean Saunders.
His run. He started his run about 15 or 20 yards outside the penalty box. That's when he started his run. He must have run about 35 yards to hit his penalty. I can still see it in my head thinking, where's he going? He's walking away outside the penalty box, and then he runs at 100 miles an hour and sticks on the bottom of the corner.
You gotta love him. All right, thank you so much for your tweet. Great questions tonight. Thanks so much for the guys for being with us. We'll do it well again tomorrow. As well, every single day, make sure you join us on ESPN FC.